Today I have with me Ken Boone, president of the Peace Valley Landowners Association. Would you be able to introduce yourself and what you do?
Yes, hi, thanks, Ariel. Arlene and myself, we live in the Peace River Valley between Fort St. John and Hudson's Hope along Highway 29. And we farm here. We've done a number of things. We do a few different aspects of farming here, and we've been involved in log home construction. And as you mentioned, I'm president of the Peace Valley Landowner Association.
In 2016, BC Hydro attempted to expropriate you and your family from your home, despite flooding not having been planned to start until 2024. How did this end up playing out?
Well, I'll try to do the short version of the story because it is very confusing. So we were at the very lead of the first people that BC Hydro wanted to expropriate, and did expropriate. And that was mostly due to the fact that the highway realignment that was required for Highway 29 went right through our house here. And because we're lower down in the valley than most people being expropriated, a high water event during river diversion, which is happening right now, river diversion has taken place while they're building the dam in the main stem of the river. It could flood right back here and actually flood the existing highway by the bridge here at Cache Creek, which is a tributary. So, which is really hard for a lot of people to get their head wrapped around, because we're a long ways away from the dam. It's hard to imagine the water getting that high just from river diversion.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, they had to get this new highway built here before river diversion. As it turned out, that did not happen, because the first route that they were going to put for the highway right through our house ended up having to be change because of some issues involved, including the flooding of First Nation gravesite on the west side of Cache Creek, right across from our house here. So there was problems with that first route that they tried to do. So even though they had cleared all the trees for that route, then they ended up changing their mind. Now the new highway is going to go north of our building, and that is where the highway is going to go. They've cleared the trees for that route now. And they've built a temporary bridge just in case of a flood event for the highway to get diverted to. So you can't make this stuff up. It's crazy the amount of money being spent on this project for so many crazy things that have nothing to do with generating electricity, which is what this is all supposed to be about, and all the mitigation measures, and it goes on and on. So as it stands right now, I'm sitting right in our old house. Hydro owns it because they expropriated it. We're supposedly going to get it back because it's not going to have a road go through it, but we won't be able to live in it, they tell us, after the reservoir is flooded, because it is too close to the bank here and it could slough in, even though some independent engineers said that wouldn't happen here. Hydro's sticking to their original lines that showed the stability being behind our house here. So we can stay in a house for now. It's not our house anymore. We're going to get the house back, but then we won't be able to live in it. So I guess we'll turn it into a storage shed or something. I don't know. All I do know is they tell us that we have to move out of the house, and I don't think they believed we're actually going to move out of it, because they instructed us that they would disconnect our water and sewer. I think they want to make sure we actually move out, or make it very uncomfortable to stay in. So thus is the life of dealing with BC Hydro.
Mm-hmm. In 2015, you said that you were still confident the dam would not be built, assuming that all but one court case was won. Now in 2021, that Horgan has recently approved the continuation, has your opinion on that changed?
Yeah, good question. Well, in some ways, yes, some ways, no, I guess, would be the answer. Obviously, the legal challenges have not worked out so well so far. But as I said, there's one strong one left, and it will apparently be held before the flooding. It is somewhat hard to believe that the project would be stopped at that stage, but we'll see. I mean, who knows? Who knew back in 2017 when the new government come in and they sent us to the BCUC, and of course a whole lot of problems were revealed and the budget went up again, but they proceeded at that time, and a lot of people thought, well, that is it. Now it is a done deal. Now they're going to build it. And who would have thought back then that this project would have got reviewed again, and really with what was found just last fall, and it was that this project should have been shut down still. It's such a white elephant, and the economics are so bad, and the geotechnical problems are a real risk, and all of that. So I've given up trying to predict what will happen in the future with the Site C dam. I think geotechnical problems are going to continue to be a problem, and of course, if they get bad enough, you can only throw so much money and so much attempted fixes at a problem, and if they don't work, they might have no choice but to turn their back on this yet. Who knows? I mean, it'd be better if it happened that way, I suppose, than if they flood the reservoir and then the whole thing caves in on them and endangers people's lives downstream. I'm not going to predict anymore, but I don't think we've seen the end of their grief.
And so, did your activism start in conjunction with the approval of the Site C dam, or were you experienced in protesting beforehand?
No, pretty much kind of was Site C. I mean, most of my life I've been fairly conservative, well, maybe middle of the road politically, and I'm a fiscal conservative. So that's why Site C really ticks me off, because it's such a waste of money. I think I've grown more left wing, more progressive politically and in my views as a result of dealing with Site C and associating with a lot of the like-minded people who are opposed to it. But it's and I would add that this is not, I don't view this as a not in my backyard, a NIMBY issue. In fact, initially, before I kind of got educated on Site C, I remember always thinking, well, if they really need the power and there's no alternatives, okay, that's, sucks to be us. They'll just have to do it. But you can't help when you get more educated on the issues that there's just no need for this project. It's a horrible project. Large hydro is not the way to go anymore. And that's just becoming more and more reinforced every year now with the advancements of the clean and green renewables. So large hydro just does not make sense anymore. And we shouldn't be doing it anymore. And that should have started before Site C. We should not be building Site C. So that's kind of how I got to where I am now, I guess, in my activism.
Would you be able to tell us a bit about your farm? What role does it play in the community, and what is the history that surrounds it?
Well, this farm's been in my wife's family for some time. Her grandfather was not the original homesteader here at Bear Flat. He was a homesteader south of the Peace at Dawson Creek, and then he bought here from the original homesteaders, and slowly just kind of bought more land here as it became available, starting in the 40s. But we're on where we are is it's over a 100-year-old farm now. From the original homesteaders, and yeah, the river bottom land is class one farmland. It's phenomenal farmland, and it's the only class one farmland north of Quesnel in the province of BC. Mostly due to the east-west orientation of the valley, so it really gathers the sun in here. It's low elevation, and of course the long daylights in the summer, and of course quality of the soil. So it's just phenomenal. So, and unfortunately, the threat of Site C has been hanging over it like a cloud since the 50s, literally. Like, the flood reserve was placed on this valley in 1957 for future dams such as the Site C. So that has had an impact. And of course, hydro's been buying up land whenever they could. But, so, you know, hydro did own a fair chunk of land in the valley. But it's a real shame to see this kind of farmland being lost through project. And it's true, it hasn't been utilized to its max. I would say it was more at some time before big box stores and cheap fuel made just going to a Costco or whatever, you know, attractive to people. But I think we can all appreciate that those days are going to come to an end, especially with climate change. The loss of this kind of farmland is, you know, is very irresponsible, and we just can't be doing it anymore. And the potential to grow amazing amount of foods here is, you know, would really be utilized. And we leased out a portion of our river bottom for a number of years to a market garden operation. And it was just incredible what they grew there, cantaloupe, watermelon, and of course, corn. And Arlene and myself, we've been doing a little bit more and more of that ourselves here now. And so essentially, you can grow things down here in the valley on this narrow strip that you cannot grow elsewhere in the Peace River country, which is a huge agriculture area. But the very best of it is in the river valley, and lost, you know, a lot of it or most of it will be lost to the reservoir or to the realignment of the highways. So it's just a shame, and we shouldn't be doing that anymore.
Mm-hmm. So your homestead utilizes some sustainable energy production methods, such as solar panels. If Site C were not in the question, what would your overall long-term vision for your farm look like?
Well, yeah, we ourselves here, we do net meter with solar, and it's just incredible. I just love it. And I encourage anybody to do it, even with the changes in the, you know, the government's changing the, or BC Hydro, I guess, is changing the net metering program somewhat, but it's still a good program. If, you know, the key is now just size your system to what you need and on a yearly basis. And you just trade kilowatts with BC Hydro from when you're using them and when you're have an excess. And so it's still a good system. I think that's the future. And also, I think local distributed generation, you know, from sustainable sources. This big grid system of transmission lines going helter skelter all over the country with long distance transmission. I don't think that shouldn't be the future. You know, we have it; mm-hmm. It can be there, and you know, we should continue to use it. But I think expansion of our electrical grid needs to be more small scale and local, and that's where the jobs are, and it's better benefits for farmers and individuals and First Nations and you name it. That's where the future should be. And it, you know, I mean, you don't have to look too far back. Look at what happened in Texas. You know, if you have a whole lot of microgrids all over the place, the resilience of your grid is just so much greater. You're not exposed to one catastrophe somewhere. I don't think that's where the federal government wants things to go, and it doesn't appear that's where provincial government needs to go. And I think that's important that people fight, you know, fight that and fight for a grid system that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Could you give us a picture of what it's like for you and your family living day-to-day next to the Site C construction zone? How have things changed since construction on the dam commenced?
Yeah, well, it's getting kind of grim here. I'm sitting in the house here, our old house, and literally 200 to 400 yards from me in the creek right in front of me here, they're building a 600 meter bridge right now to cross the creek because they got to put a highway where no one would ever put a highway normally in their right mind, but they have to put a highway there because where it makes sense to put the highway and where it is right now will be flooded. So they've got to cross this what will now be more or less an inlet, you know, on a reservoir, But right now, of course, it's just a little creek. I mean, a little creek. And so that they're doing all that work. So they're logging, they're stripping topsoils, they're drilling pilings, pouring concrete, back trucks going. It's just 6 days a week. Well, they work 7 days a week there, but it's just a constant drone of noise and backup beepers and everything. And then, of course, the logging in the valley, they're building a bathtub ring in the whole valley here where they're logging the trees from that level, reservoir level down. So, and a lot of that wood just gets pushed into brush piles and burned, like giant cottonwood trees. That's where the cottonwood trees grow. They're not merchantable, they're not in a large volume. So they stuff 4 foot diameter cottonwood trees into brush piles and try to leave them sit for a year and light them up. It's just every aspect of what they're doing in this valley is just destructive. I would say there's still a long ways to go. This valley is still worth saving by all means. And trees will grow back. And I don't know if they, I guess if they get this highway too far advanced, I guess we'll have a new highway that makes no sense or people can bungee jump off of it because it'll be about 125 feet above the creek here or more. But that's where we're at right now. And it's disturbing. I talked to a lot of the different landowners in the valley, and yeah, it's very frustrating and upsetting to people to see what's happening to this valley. I don't know how many people from down south have been up here, had an opportunity to drive this highway, but the Highway 29 between Hudson's Hope and Fort St. John is renowned in just such a beautiful scenic drive. You're driving along the Peace River, often up on the breaks, looking down on the river, and the whole south bank that you look across at is part of what used to be the Peace Boudreaux protected area. So the south bank is all totally pristine, the north bank very much so, but also with farms interspersed in between. I mean, basically things were being done in this valley where it made sense, and now all of that is just in the midst of getting destroyed.
Do you think there's a chance that life for farmers near the dam will be able to go back to how things were before?
Well, yeah, of course there's still going to be agriculture, and some of the farmers are already in the midst of moving up further, and they're going to lose their bottom lands, but they'll still have the next bench up to farm. So that will carry on. Who knows what, how it will change the climate. I think it's going to be cooler. I think the consensus, it will probably be cooler springs and might hold the heat better in the fall. So that can be beneficial or not. I don't know. I guess we'll find out that way. But yeah, I mean, humans and stuff are resilient, and I guess we'll carry on with what we got here.
So, what comes next for you, your family, and the PVLA in terms of protest?
Well, I should make clear my involvement at Rocky Mountain Ford and having a civil suit against me was as myself as an individual. I was not there representing the Peace Valley Landowner Association. We were in court at the time with a judicial review, and hydro lawyers tried to make an issue about me sidestepping the court process and doing activism, and so I had to make it pretty clear it wasn't, and I was not. I was there as an individual. Everybody was. But so PVLA, the Peace Valley Landowners, we're not doing protest as a group. We're a landowners association, and it's tough right now for the association. You have all these landowners who are in different stages of having their lives turned upside down. It was easier before when we could see that coming, but we hadn't been upset yet, and we took action to try avoid having our lives upset. and now everybody's at different stages or haven't already moved out. So it's a tough situation for the Landowner Association, but we'll see what comes. And you know, we just recently worked with Robert McCullough after the government made their decision here in February. We worked with Robert McCullough and the energy expert that we used in the BCUC review, and he took another quick look at the economics and did a report based on that. And he's with McCullough Research out of Portland, Oregon. You know, so we're doing a few limited things like that, but it's for all the landowners in the valley. It's a really tough time because, you know, people are having to make the decision on what to do and where to go and what to, you know, what kind of move to make in their life. And I know for Arlene and myself here, like, we still have, out of all the land we had, we basically have where the buildings are right here. We're going to be left with, I think, 9.5 acres or something. And it's going to be wedged kind of in a triangle between the reservoir and the highway. And yeah, what's that going to be like? We're used to having a pretty big, wide open space here. And of course, farming a lot more land and all that kind of stuff. So we don't really know what we're going to do here ourselves. And just kind of playing it by ear. And I think, you know, you see that with a lot of people in the valley at different stages. It's tough. And some people haven't even been approached yet by BC Hydro, but they will be, and they know that's coming. So, yeah, it's tough.
Mm-hmm. So what can ordinary people from across BC and Canada, like, do to support you with your goals?
Well, I would say, I think to me what it boils down to is large hydro is just a thing of the past. We don't need it. Fortunately, we don't need it anymore. It's not a climate change solution. And there's lots of alternatives. And in this day and age, the negative impacts from a large hydro on a river valley, we only have so many left. And I think what we're seeing from climate change is it's important to keep what we have. For, you know, an intact river system has incredible ecosystem services that you throw out when you dam a river. And we can't afford that anymore. And we literally cannot afford to build any more dams. They're all going, you know, uber over budget. And they don't make economic sense anymore. And of course, obviously, it don't work out very good for reconciliation with First Nations. And every way you look at it, they're just a horrible thing. And people need to get that in their head. Fortunately, we don't need to build any more dams. And that's a good thing because they're horrible. So that is where I think if people want to help support that, there's a North American Mega Dam Resistance Alliance. And basically what they do is, and we collaborate with them in different ways, looking right across North America at no more large hydro dams and finding a way to move forward smarter with our grid system and such. So there's lots of petitions. They have one out right now, I think. If you just Google North America or NAMRA, NAMRA, North American Mega Dam Resistance Alliance, they have a petition out right now. And they, like I say, they work on both sides of the border, Canada and U.S. Lead Now and Dogwood have a petition out on Sightsee. Write your local MLA or your MP, no more large hydro dams. Let's move on. And I would add, you know, the argument you hear sometimes, yeah, well, you need that dispatchable power, you know, you need that capacity. In BC, we have more than enough capacity. Like, we didn't need Site C. We didn't, right now, we don't need any more power. Is that going to change? Yeah, probably, you know, I mean, we're going to electrify the economy. What we could and should be doing in this province is just simply building the renewables, the clean and green renewables, as we need them. And that's the beauty. We don't even have to build them right now because a lot of them you can bring online so fast, solar and wind and such. We already have the battery. We have 90% hydropower in this province, and we're selling it. We're giving a lot of it away to the Americans for dirt cheap because we don't need it. And we could be using that. So BC is so well positioned not to build any more large hydro, and it's so frustrating that that is exactly what we're doing. And it's going to suck the oxygen out of the room on smart, clean, job creating projects. And that's going to hurt, you know, a lot of First Nations and such that would like to move forward with that as part of their, you know, economic reconciliation and such. We can't do it in this province because we can't afford it because of Site C. So, yeah, I encourage people to check those things out and just voice their opposition to government and write letters to editors. And, you know, unfortunately, we don't really have a forum right now. It's not like there's a BCUC review taking place right now or whatnot. There probably will be another one on Site C when when it further goes off the rails, but we don't have it now. So people just need to take initiative and voice their opposition.
Is there anything else that you would like to add?
I think that covers it. Other than, you know, it's so frustrating having to focus on Site C so much in our lives. Climate change is by far the biggest challenge we have in this world right now. Mm-hmm. And that is where focus needs to be. And I'm so encouraged to see, like, south of the border, President Biden instructing all his government ministries, or whatever they call it down there, to basically view the world through a climate change lens and have that in their mind whenever they're making decisions. You know, in the simplest way, that is what we need to be doing in this country and in this province, and we're not. You know, I mean, we have a prime minister that just bought a pipeline, and we have John Horgan promoting the LNG industry, and which means more pipelines and burning more fossil fuels. We can, you know, we need to do so much better and get on with it. And you know, and Site C is just a small part of it, but it's a critical part. No more large hydro dams is part of that picture, or needs to be part of that picture. And let's not be fooled by the powerful lobbies who are trying to spin the message now that we need more large hydro to fight climate change. That is simply not true.